A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been looking at the machinery again. This week, he's asking what it actually takes for a model to write this podcast, start to finish, in one shot. He laid out the three skills he thinks matter: coherence over a long context window, avoiding repetition, and the ability to hold three distinct character voices at once. Then he walked through the architecture experiments, sub-agents for each host, separate context windows, the script becoming a record of agents talking to each other, and the surprise was that the single-generation agent beat all of it. He also flagged the cost reality, which is that the language model is maybe a fifth of the serverless GPU bill, because text-to-speech eats the budget. So the constraint on picking a script model isn't price. It's whether the thing can hold the 30-minute conversation together without sagging in the middle. Which benchmarks actually measure that, and which model families are worth trying when he occasionally swaps out the baseline.
So what does it actually take to write a 30-minute conversation?
That's the question. And it's a weird one, because most of what people benchmark has nothing to do with it.
Right. The task here isn't answer a question, not summarize a document, not write a function. It's generate, in a single pass, maybe 9 or 10,000 tokens of dialogue across three speakers, where each speaker has an established voice. The episode has to build through a topic, and there's no revision loop. The script goes from the model to the voice pipeline. Whatever comes out the other end is the episode.
One pass. No editor. No second draft.
And that's the thing Daniel's prompt is really poking at. A 30-minute script is long enough that the model is generating well past the point where most models start to drift. The opening is fine, the closing is fine, and the middle is where the thing falls apart.
Which is the exact opposite of how I'd have guessed these models fail. You'd think the beginning would be the hard part, before it has any context to work with. But no.
The beginning benefits from the prompt. The prompt is dense with instruction, character notes, topic framing, all of it sitting right there at the start of the context window. The model attends to it heavily. The end benefits from recency. The middle is where the prompt has scrolled far enough away that it's competing with everything the model has already written.
So the middle of the episode is where the model forgets what the episode was supposed to be about.
There's a name for this, the lost in the middle problem. Models trained on causal language modeling, which is most of them, attend best to the beginning and end of context. Performance degrades in the middle. There was a paper that demonstrated this pretty cleanly, where they put a fact in the middle of a long context and asked the model to retrieve it, and accuracy dropped off a cliff compared to the same fact at the start or the end.
And our context is the entire episode, because the model is reading its own output as it generates. Every new line is conditioned on everything before it.
The model is both writer and audience. It's generating line by line, and each line becomes part of the context for the next line. So by the time you're at minute 15, the model is looking back at a context window where the prompt is buried under 7,000 tokens of its own dialogue. And the middle of that window is where attention is weakest.
Daniel called this out directly. The single agent has to maintain coherence for the entire range of text. One logical treatment of the topic, minimal repetition, coherent structure, characters holding their voices.
Three different failure modes, and they're not the same thing. Coherence is about the argument or narrative holding together. Repetition is about the model circling back to the same point because it's lost the thread and it's grabbing at what's still salient. Voice is about the distribution of language staying distinct per speaker. A model could be coherent and still have both hosts sounding identical. A model can have great voice separation and still repeat itself three times.
And the repetition one is sneaky, because it's not the same as the model saying the same sentence twice. It's more like the model restating the thesis in slightly different words every few minutes, because the prompt said to discuss a topic, and the model keeps reannouncing what it's doing instead of moving forward.
There's a term for this in the generation literature. Diversity collapse. Long generations tend toward repetition and template-like structure as the sampling distribution narrows over time. The model starts with a wide range of possible next tokens, and as it generates more and more, the distribution gets pickier. It locks into patterns. The same sentence structures, the same transitions, the same rhetorical moves. That's where you get the thing where every episode starts to sound like every other episode.
That's the failure pattern behind hosts sounding the same. It's not that the model can't distinguish the voices. It's that over a long generation, the sampling distribution narrows until the difference between Korn and Herman is a coin flip.
And this is where Daniel's multi-agent experiment is interesting, because on paper, it should solve exactly this. Each character gets its own agent, its own context window, its own system prompt with the character notes. The voices should be perfectly distinct, because they're literally different models, or different instances of the same model, generating independently.
And the result was worse.
Much worse. He said the scripts read like a record of agents talking to each other, which is exactly what they were.
There's a write-up on this. The comparison of single-agent versus multi-agent frameworks, and the finding is that multi-agent systems introduce coordination overhead and context fragmentation. For linear creative writing, that overhead outweighs the benefits.
Think about what a multi-agent setup does to a conversation. Agent A writes a line. Agent B receives that line as input and writes a response. But Agent B doesn't have the full arc of the conversation in its context, or if it does, it's a different context than Agent A's. Each agent has its own view of the world. The shared state has to be passed back and forth through a message protocol, and every handoff is a place where nuance gets dropped.
So you get voices that are distinct, but the conversation doesn't build. Each response is reacting to the last line, not to the episode as a whole.
That's the coordination overhead. The agents spend their capacity on the protocol instead of the content. And the context fragmentation means no single agent ever sees the whole episode. So the thing Daniel was trying to fix, the middle sag, gets worse, because the middle of the episode is where the handoffs have accumulated the most drift.
The single agent has the opposite problem. It sees everything because it's all in one context window. The full arc of the conversation is available at every step. The voices are consistent because they're all sampled from the same distribution, the same model, the same context. When Korn makes a joke, the model knows it's Korn making the joke because it wrote the joke and it wrote the setup.
And it can reference earlier turns without any cross-agent communication. If Herman says something in minute 4 and Korn calls back to it in minute 22, that's just the model attending to its own earlier output. In a multi-agent setup, that callback has to survive being passed through the message protocol, which it often doesn't.
The trade-off is that the single agent has to hold the entire episode in one context, which is exactly where long context degradation hits hardest.
Right. Single agent means you're betting everything on the model's ability to maintain coherence over a very long generation. Multi-agent trades that problem for coordination overhead and context fragmentation. Daniel's experiment showed that the second set of problems is worse for this specific task.
So if single agent is the right architecture, the next question is how you actually know which model is best at it.
And this is where the benchmark landscape gets weird. The standard benchmarks, MMLU, GPQA, those measure knowledge and reasoning. They ask the model to answer questions. They don't ask it to write a 30-minute conversation with 3 distinct speakers and no repetition.
Daniel said this directly. Knowing which benchmarks to look at depends on how you define the tasks the model has to excel at. And the tasks here aren't the tasks that MMLU tests.
There's a benchmark that's actually purpose-built for this. Podbench. It's specifically for podcast script generation. It tests multi-speaker coordination, long context coherence, and speaker profile adherence, which is, almost point for point, the 3 skills Daniel listed.
Podbench. That's the one to watch.
It's the closest thing to a direct evaluation of this exact task. It's not a general language benchmark. It's not even a general creative writing benchmark. It's built around the specific failure pattern of podcast scripts. Does the conversation hold together over a long generation? Do the speakers stay distinct? Does the script follow the speaker profiles?
And the speaker profile adherence part is interesting, because that's the voice synthesis question, Not just can the model write dialogue, but can it write dialogue that sounds like the specific person it's supposed to be?
There's another benchmark worth looking at for the long context piece. Long GenBench. It's built specifically to test whether models can maintain coherence and avoid repetition over extended outputs. That's the middle SAG problem, directly measured.
So, PodBench for the podcast. Specific stuff? Long GenBench for the long generation coherence.
And neither of them is a knowledge test. They're both about the quality of long-form generation, which is the thing that actually matters here.
The lost-in-the-middle research also points at something about architecture. Models with sliding window attention or sparse attention patterns handle long contexts differently than models with full attention.
Full attention is the key variable. Some of the newer architectures keep full attention over the entire context, which means they degrade less in the middle. Sliding window models literally can't see the middle of a long context in the same way, because their attention is limited to a window around the current position.
So, a model could have a million token context window and still lose the thread in the middle of a 10,000 token generation if the attention mechanism is the limiting factor.
That's the misconception to kill. Context window size and middle context retention are different things. A model can advertise a massive context window and still have the lost in the middle problem, because the window is how much it can hold, not how well it attends to all of it.
Which is why Daniel can't just look at the spec sheet and pick the model with the biggest number.
Right. The spec sheet tells you capacity. It doesn't tell you attention quality. And attention quality is what determines whether minute 15 of the episode is coherent or a mess.
So what's actually worth trying? Daniel asked about model families.
Claude Sonnet and Opus Lines have a strong track record on long-form creative writing. The coherence over long generations is consistently good. If you're looking for a model that can hold a conversation together for 30 minutes, Claude is the obvious first alternative to test.
And Gemini's long context handling is worth a look. The million-plus token context windows suggest strong middle context retention, though, as we just said, the window size isn't the whole story.
DeepSeek is the current baseline, and it's got the cost-performance angle. Daniel's been using DeepSeek V4 Pro for a while now, and the cost is low enough that he can run it daily. The question is whether a more expensive model buys enough quality improvement to justify the swap.
And the cost framing matters here. Daniel said the LLM generation is 1/4 to 1/5 of the serverless GPU costs. TTS is the dominant cost, so trying a more expensive model for script generation is affordable. The constraint is quality, not price.
That's a really important point. If the script model doubles in cost, the overall project cost goes up by maybe 20% of the LLM share, which is 1/5 of the total. So you're talking about a single-digit percentage increase in total cost. That's nothing. The question is purely whether the scripts get better.
And the way to measure better isn't to run MMLU. It's to run a small batch of test episodes through each candidate model and score them on the things that actually matter.
Voice consistency, repetition, structural coherence. You'd want to score each one separately because a model might be great at voice and terrible at repetition. And you'd compare against the current DeepSeek baseline.
There's also the EQBench Creative Writing Leaderboard, which tracks voice consistency and persona adherence across models. That's the closest thing to a public leaderboard for the voice synthesis piece.
EQBench is worth watching. It's not a perfect proxy, because it's about creative writing generally, not podcast scripts specifically. But the voice consistency and persona adherence dimensions are exactly the skills that matter here.
So the evaluation stack is PodBench for the podcast, specific benchmark, LongNinBench for the long generation coherence, EQBench for the voice and persona piece, and then a small batch of test episodes scored by hand for the final call.
And the hand scoring is the part that gets overlooked. Benchmarks give you a signal, but they're not the thing itself. The thing itself is, does this model write a good episode of this podcast? You can only know that by running it and listening.
Which is what Daniel's been doing, in a sense. The production history is a series of A-B tests. Gemini, then Sonnet, then DeepSeek. Each swap was a model change, and the episodes are the data.
And the fact that DeepSeek has held the job for a while suggests it's been good enough on the quality axis while being cheap enough on the cost axis. But Daniel's asking the right question, which is, what would actually be better?
The thing about this task is that it's not a knowledge problem. It's a coherence problem. The model doesn't need to know more facts. It needs to hold a thread for 10,000 tokens.
And that's why the benchmark landscape matters. If you look at MMLU, you're optimizing for the wrong thing. You'd pick a model that's great at answering questions and terrible at writing dialogue.
The model that tops the general leaderboards might not be the one that can hold a conversation together for 30 minutes.
And the model that can hold a conversation together might not be the most expensive one. DeepSeek has been doing the job, and the job isn't trivial. 9,000 tokens of multi-speaker dialogue with distinct voices and a coherent arc is a hard generation task.
What breaks first, in your experience? When you're reading a script and it's not working, what's the failure pattern?
The middle. Always the middle. The opening is fine because the prompt is fresh in context. The closing is fine because the model is wrapping up and it's got the recency effect working for it. The middle is where the model forgets what it was doing and starts repeating itself or drifting into generic filler.
And the repetition is the tell. When you see the same point being made in slightly different words for the third time, that's the model losing the thread and reaching for whatever's still salient in context.
Diversity collapse. The sampling distribution has narrowed so much that the model is stuck in a loop of rephrasing the same idea. It's not a knowledge failure, it's a sampling failure.
Which is why the single agent approach is interesting, because the fix for diversity collapse isn't more agents. It's better sampling, or a better model, or a prompt that's structured to keep the distribution wide.
Daniel's prompt includes character notes, topic framing, structural guidance. All of that's designed to keep the model on the rails, but the prompt is only at the beginning of the context. By the middle of the generation, it's buried.
So the model is flying on instruments it can't see.
The prompt is the flight plan, but the model is in the air, and the middle of the flight is where it has to rely on what it's already written to know where it's going.
And if what it's already written is drifting, the drift compounds.
That's the thing about long generation. The errors are auto-correlated. A small drift in minute 10 becomes a large drift in minute 20, because the model is conditioning on its own output. It's not just forgetting the prompt. It's building on its own mistakes.
So the architecture question, single agent versus multi-agent, is really a question about where you want the errors to come from.
Multi-agent gives you coordination errors at every handoff. Single agent gives you coherence errors in the middle. Daniel's experiment showed that the coordination errors were worse.
The single agent errors are at least addressable with a better model or a better prompt. The coordination errors are structural.
There's also the question of what the multi-agent setup does to the creative quality. When agents are passing messages, they tend to write in a more transactional way. Each line is a response to the previous line, not a contribution to the whole. The conversation loses its shape.
The single agent can write a conversation that has an arc, because it can see the whole arc. It knows where it's going, or at least it has the prompt's guidance about where to go.
The arc is what makes it a podcast episode rather than a transcript of a chat. The episode has to build. It has to introduce a topic, explore it, and land somewhere. That's a structural requirement that's hard to satisfy when the structure is fragmented across multiple contexts.
The single-agent approach isn't just a cost or simplicity win. It's a quality win for this specific task.
The trade-off is real. The single agent has to do something very hard, which is maintain coherence over a long generation. But the alternative is worse.
Daniel said he was surprised by the result. I think the surprise comes from the intuition that more agents means more specialization, and more specialization means better output. But for linear creative writing, the specialization is the problem.
Specialization works when the task is decomposable. You can split a coding task into modules and have different agents write different modules because the interfaces are clean. A conversation isn't decomposable that way. The whole point of a conversation is that the parts are interdependent.
Every line depends on every other line. That's the definition of a conversation.
That's why the single agent wins. The interdependence is the task. Fragmenting it destroys the thing you're trying to create.
Now Daniel's looking at benchmarks, and the question is, which ones actually measure this interdependence?
Podbench is the one that's built for it. Multi-speaker coordination, long context coherence, speaker profile adherence. Those are the three axes that matter.
Long gen bench for the long context piece. Which is the middle side problem?
Longen Bench is interesting because it's not about knowledge. It's about whether the model can generate extended text without losing coherence or repeating itself. That's the diversity collapse problem directly measured.
If you're Daniel, and you're occasionally trying out other models, you'd want to look at PodBench results, Longen Bench results, and EQ Bench creative writing scores, and then run a small batch of test episodes.
The test episodes are the real evaluation. Benchmarks give you a prior. The test episodes give you the posterior.
The scoring has to be on the specific dimensions. Voice consistency, repetition, structural coherence. Not a general quality score.
Because a model could write a beautiful episode that has the host sounding identical, or a coherent episode that repeats the thesis 5 times. You need to score the dimensions separately to know what you're trading.
The cost angle is almost a non-issue, which is unusual. Most of the time, the constraint is cost. Here, the constraint is quality.
Because TTS dominates, the voice synthesis is the expensive part. The script generation is a fraction of the total, so Daniel can afford to try a more expensive script model without breaking the budget.
Which means the decision is purely about whether the scripts get better. And that's a refreshing problem to have.
It also means the benchmark question isn't about cost-performance ratio. It's about absolute quality on the dimensions that matter.
Which model families would you actually put in the test batch?
Claude Sonnet and Opus for the long-form coherence track record. Gemini for the long-context handling. DeepSeek is the baseline, so it's already in the batch. And then whatever the EQ Bench leaderboard is pointing at for voice consistency.
The EQ Bench leaderboard is the one to watch for the voice piece, because it specifically tracks persona adherence, which is the thing that keeps Korn sounding like Korn and Herman sounding like Herman.
That's not a trivial thing. The model has to hold 2 distinct voices, plus Hilbert's voice when he shows up, and keep them consistent across the whole episode. That's a distributional constraint on the generation.
The model is sampling from a distribution that has to be conditioned on the speaker. And that conditioning has to hold for 9,000 tokens.
Which is why diversity collapse is such a problem. The speaker conditioning is part of the sampling distribution, and as the distribution narrows, the speaker conditioning gets washed out. The voices converge.
The models that resist diversity collapse are the ones that are going to hold the voices longest.
That's an empirical question. You can't tell from the spec sheet. You have to run the generation and listen.
Which brings us back to the test batch. Run the same prompt through each candidate, score the output, compare.
The scoring should be blind, if possible. Don't know which model wrote which script, just score the dimensions.
That's a nice experimental design. Daniel's a developer, he'd appreciate that.
The other thing to look at is the prompt itself.
Like putting a mid-script checkpoint in the prompt, reminding the model at the halfway point that it should be building, not repeating.
That's an interesting idea. The prompt could include a structural instruction that says, at the midpoint, reread the episode so far and make sure the second half builds on it rather than restating it.
But that's a prompt engineering fix, not a model fix. And Daniel's question is about which model to use.
Both matter. The model is the engine, the prompt is the steering, but the engine has to be capable of holding the road.
The answer to Daniel's question is, PodBench, Longen Bench, EQ Bench, and a hand-scored test batch. And the modal families worth trying are Claude, Gemini, and DeepSeek as the baseline.
With the caveat that the general benchmarks are useless for this. MMLU and GPQA tell you nothing about whether a model can write a 30-minute conversation.
The model that tops MMLU might write an episode that sags in the middle and has both hosts sounding like the same person.
The model that's mediocre on MMLU might write a beautiful episode, because the skills are completely different.
This is the meta-weirdness of the whole thing. We're using a model to discuss what model should be used to write the discussion.
The recursion is real, but the question is practical. Daniel wants to know what to watch and what to try, and the answer is concrete.
PodBench for the podcast-specific benchmark. Longen Bench for the long-context coherence. EQ Bench for the voice and persona. And a small batch of test episodes for the final call.
The model families, Claude for the long-form creative writing track record, Gemini for the long-context handling, DeepSeek as the baseline.
The cost isn't the constraint. The constraint is whether the model can hold a thread for 9,000 tokens without dropping it.
That's a hard problem. It's the problem that the Lost in the Middle research identified, and it's the problem the diversity collapse makes worse.
But it's also a solvable problem, in the sense that some models are better at it than others. The benchmarks and the test batch are how you find them.
The single-agent architecture is the right call. The multi-agent experiment showed that fragmentation is worse than degradation.
The flow is single pass, single agent, long context, distinct voices, coherent arc. And the evaluation is pod bench, long end bench, EQ bench, test batch.
That's the answer to Daniel's question.
The open question is whether the middle sag can be addressed with a better model, a better prompt, or both.
The prompt is the cheaper lever. If you can reduce the middle sag with a structural instruction, you might not need to swap models at all.
But the model is the deeper lever. A model with better middle context retention will write better episodes, full stop.
The benchmarks are how you find that model. Pod bench and long end bench are the ones that measure the thing that matters.
The practical advice is, watch pod bench, watch long end bench, watch EQ bench, and when you're ready to test, run a batch of episodes and score the dimensions.
Don't look at MMLU. It's measuring a different thing entirely.
The model that writes this episode well is the model that can hold a conversation together for 30 minutes. That's the benchmark that matters.
Panasonic SV3-700. 4-track cassette recorder. 1994, I was cutting radio drama scripts down from 45 minutes to 30, and the recorder was how I checked the pacing. You'd sit there with a stopwatch and the script, and you'd mark where the tension dropped. It always dropped in the middle. Always. The writers would nail the opening because the opening is the hook. They'd nail the ending because the ending is the payoff. The middle is where they'd lose the thread because the middle is where the plot has to actually hold together without the hook or the payoff to lean on. And the way we caught it was a mid-script check. The producer would listen to the first 15 minutes, and if the tension was sagging, they'd flag it before the writer finished the second half. It was a review pass on the middle. Not the whole thing, just the middle. Because the middle is where the thing falls apart, and if you catch it there, you can fix it before it's baked in. The models have the same problem. You said it yourself. The middle of the context window is where attention is weakest. So the middle of the script is where the model forgets what it was doing. The difference is, the radio writers had an editor. This podcast has no editor. It's a single pass. The script goes from the model to the voice pipeline, and whatever comes out is the episode. So the question is whether you can put a review pass on the middle without breaking the single pass advantage. A checkpoint at minute 15. The model reads what it's written so far, checks whether it's repeating itself, checks whether the voices are still distinct, and then writes the second half. It's still one agent. It's still one context. But it's a pause in the middle to look back.
That's a mid-script checkpoint. It's not a second agent. It's the same agent, pausing at the halfway point to re-anchor.
It's exactly the kind of structural instruction that could reduce the middle sag without changing the model. The prompt could say, at the midpoint, review the episode so far and make sure the second half builds on it rather than restating it.
The question is whether the review pass actually helps, or whether it just adds tokens and makes the middle sag worse.
That's an empirical question, but the idea has legs. The model is already conditioning on its own output. A deliberate re-anchoring at the midpoint could work like a second prompt, refreshing the original instructions at the exact moment they've scrolled out of effective attention.
The radio producers didn't rewrite the script, they just flagged the sag. The writer rewrote the middle. But this model is the writer and the producer at the same time, so the checkpoint has to be self-administered. The model has to catch its own sag. That's harder than having a separate producer, but it's better than nothing.
It preserves the single-pass architecture. No second agent, no context fragmentation, just a pause for self-review.
The cost would go up slightly because the review pass is output tokens, but the LLM cost is a fifth of the total, so a few hundred extra tokens is negligible.
The stopwatch was the other thing. 30 minutes isn't a suggestion, it's the slot. You learn to feel where the middle is, because the middle is where the clock says it is. 15 minutes in, the listener is either still with you or they've checked out. The model doesn't know that. The model just generates tokens. Somebody has to tell it where the middle is.
The model knows where the middle is in token count, but it doesn't know where the middle is in listener attention.
Listener attention is the thing that matters. The middle sag isn't a token problem, it's an attention problem. The listener's attention sags when the script sags. The checkpoint idea is about catching the sag before the listener does.
The cassette recorder had a counter. You could rewind to the exact spot where the tension dropped and listen to it again. That's what the checkpoint is. A rewind to the middle before the second half gets written.
The practical upshot is, try the checkpoint. Run a batch of episodes with a mid-scrib review pass and score them against the baseline. If the middle sag improves, it's a cheap fix.
If it doesn't, the model swap is still on the table. The benchmarks point at the candidates. The checkpoint is a prompt-level intervention that might buy enough improvement to avoid the swap.
The open question is whether the checkpoint breaks the flow. A review pass at minute 15 might interrupt the conversation in a way that's audible. The listener might hear the seam.
That's the risk. The checkpoint has to be invisible. The model has to re-anchor without announcing that it's re-anchoring. The second half has to feel continuous with the first half.
Which is a hard generation problem in itself. The checkpoint is a fix for one problem that might introduce another.
But it's worth testing. The cost is low, and the potential upside is high. The middle sag is the biggest quality problem in the current pipeline. If a checkpoint fixes it, that's a significant improvement for a few hundred tokens.
The benchmarks are the way to measure whether it worked. Longin Bench for the coherence, Pod Bench for the podcast-specific quality, EQ Bench for the voice consistency.
The model that can hold a conversation together for 30 minutes without a checkpoint might not exist yet. The checkpoint might be the bridge until the models catch up.
Or the checkpoint might be the thing that makes the current model good enough, and the model swap becomes unnecessary.
The radio writers never fixed the middle sag by getting smarter. They fixed it by getting edited. The model doesn't have an editor. The checkpoint is the closest thing to an editor it can have.
That's the thought to land on. The best model for this task might not be the one that tops the general benchmarks. It's the one that can hold a conversation together for 30 minutes without losing the thread. And until that model exists, the checkpoint is the editor.
Thanks to Hilbert Flemingtop for producing. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to reach us, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.